Good evening and welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, as always, joined by my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas, and Mr. Meyer Mezahi, North African freelance journalist, as we break down the Eagles of Carthage in Tunisia as they journey out to the 2018 World Cup. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining me tonight. Meyer, I want to start with you, and I'd like to ask you about your ties to Tunisian football, given that you're a freelance journalist from North Africa.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Both of my parents are Algerian. I was born and raised in North America, but we always sort of kept that culture from back home growing up. And because Algeria were so trash when I was much younger, the Tunisia were really the first side I could sort of identify with, because they had qualified to three successive World Cups as soon as I started paying attention to soccer. So 1998, 2002, and then 2006. And also the first African Cup of Nations that Algeria played in that I really paid attention to was 2004. And in that tournament, Tunisia ended up as World Cup champions. So Tunisia is a country that's interesting because they never really had the talent of a Morocco or an Algeria, but they're a much smaller country than those two as well, but they sort of compensate with their organization and their discipline. And they're a side that I really grew attached to. So I love all African football. I love North African football. So Tunisia is a side that I've always followed very, very closely.
And we'll actually keep a history lesson to that, because actually Tunisian, we'll go back into, you know, a bit of current history. But of course, we need to recognize that Tunisia is the first team to ever win a World Cup match. They beat Mexico 3-1 in Argentina, 78. They also held the defending champions, West Germany, to a goalless draw before bowing out. But as you mentioned, they did make it to three straight World Cups, 1998, 2000, 2006. But of all the four times that they did make it to a World Cup, and that's as an independent country, you know, they were a part of France prior to 1954. They finished out in the group stage. So, you know, I guess my first question to you is, you know, heading into a World Cup is obviously a great achievement. And of course, being in such a tough continent like Africa, you know, we talked about this with Sulaiman, and he argued that, you know, given the conditions and given the circumstances that they have, you know, one team out of, I believe, a few, like five or six groups go to the World Cup, you know, that's probably in debate of being the toughest in the world, better than South America, better than Europe. But of course, for a country like Tunisia, you know, making it to their fifth World Cup, you know, what are your thoughts? And what do you think is the reaction over there in Tunisia to make it back to a World Cup, considering they've always been kind of a North African powerhouse for the last, I would say, 20 years or so?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Just to touch up on the African qualifiers, I 100% agree with Suleiman, because maybe you guys didn't bring it up, but you also have to take into account the distances traveled in Africa. You can go from, you know, the top of the continent to the bottom. Like you said, there's four teams in one group, and you have to travel, and there's different weather conditions in different corners of the continent. So it can be very, very difficult to play there. And not to mention the state of the pitch, the state of the stadiums, all that. It is extremely difficult. So it's a testament to the Carthage Eagles that, again, they've made it to, I believe, their fourth World Cup in my lifetime. So, I think that it's a welcome return for the Carthage Eagles. People back home are very enthusiastic about this team. However, again, for them, they've always been put into difficult groups. And once again, they have this group with Belgium, with England, and with Panama. And I think that at home, they've sort of lost the optimism they had after qualifying, because they've been dealt such a big blow. They've lost their star player, Youssef M'Sakhny, to injury. He tore his ligaments, I believe, 2-3 weeks ago playing in Qatar. So I think they feel maybe slightly outgunned by the bigger nations like Belgium and England.
Now let's look at how they got there first, you know, before we look ahead to England and Belgium and Panama. And this was a team, like we had talked about, qualifying in Africa is very, very difficult. And they did win Group A, a group that featured DR Congo, Libya, and Guinea. All the other groups, though, had more than one difficult team. For example, Nigeria had to get by a Cameroon and an Algerian side, which was, you know, very good. Morocco eliminated Ivory Coast. Everyone knows about Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang at Gabon. They were eliminated by Morocco. We look at Senegal having the fest off Burkina Faso, and really a somewhat resurgent South African side. And, of course, Egypt, what they did by eliminating Ghana, nemesis of the folks here in the United States. We all know Ghana very, very well. There wasn't really that level of difficulty going through the group for Tunisia. And they did it by winning four matches and drawing two, only conceding four goals in World Cup qualifying. are they prepared well enough with, given what they've done for in World Cup qualifying, are they prepared with, you know, going to face off some of these tough groups, especially that really they're, the most goals they have is an international. They have a, one player with 10 international goals. I forget his name right now. It is escaping me. But that actually leads the team. And I'm just looking it up here now, and I'm actually missing it. But, you know, they don't have a lot of experience here. And a lot of their experience might even be based in Tunisia. So are they prepared enough to go on to the 2018 World Cup?
So I think you're right in pointing out that their group was not as difficult of a group as Nigeria's was, as you mentioned, who had to play against Cameroon, Algeria, and Zambia. But this was still another factor was that Libya, that was in this group, weren't playing their matches at home because of the security situation there. They were playing most of their matches actually in Tunisia, except when the two teams had to play each other, then they played that match in Algeria, and I went to that match. So it was an easier group, and right from the off, we knew, as the people that covered this game, we knew it was either going to be the DRC or Tunisia. DR Congo are one of the real dark horses on the global stage. They have a very, very good team, the likes of Junior Kabananga, of Yannick Bolasie, some very talented players, and they've been on the cusp of qualifying to the World Cup several times now. They have a very rich history. Remember, they made it into the 1974 World Cup as Zaire. And it's very difficult to go travel and play in Kinshasa. So really the story of this qualifier was who would beat who when the two sides played one another. Tunisia got the better of the DRC in Tunisia. And then in Kinshasa, in DR Congo, at Stade Tata Raphael, the Stadium of Martyrs, with 60,000, 70,000 packed stadium, you had Tunisia go down 2-0 until the 70th minute, and they came back and they made it 2-2. And really, that's the story of this Tunisian side. It's the intangibles. It's the fact that they never say die. It's the fact that their team chemistry is so good. You're right to point out the fact that not a lot of these players play in Europe. However, these players have known each other for a long, long time. They play, most of them have come through the Tunisian league. They've played with one another or against one another for the past 5 to 10 years. They know each other very well, and they've built very strong bonds with one another. So I think it's these intangibles that are difficult to sort of analyze from an outsider's perspective that make them a difficult team to play against.
And Joe, I'll just go back to what you were saying. That player was Youssef Mekani, the guy who was injured, who won't be at the World Cup. He has 14 goals and plays in Qatar. So, yep, it's certainly going to be a tough group heading into this Tunisian side. So, you know, real quick, we'll obviously talk about the nitty-gritty. Is that Group G. In order, Tunisia will take on England, who actually faced each other in the 1998 World Cup. I believe they were one of those teams that really gave them a gave them a surprise, I would say, or I don't remember the result. I'm actually just looking here.
England
1-2-0. Yeah, I was thinking of another team. Sorry about that. but regardless, yeah, it's definitely a familiar foe that the English and Tunisia has. In the second team, they will be playing Belgium on the 23rd, and then they will finish it off against Panama on the 28th. You know, many people want to put it into straightforward circumstances that this will be England and Belgium group to fight and to see who will be the top opponent for this for this group and who will head to the round of 16 and depend on who they face each other in Group H. But, you know, I just want your thoughts here on really this group for Tunisia. And, you know, is there that possibility that they could cause a surprise? I think many people, you know, want to put, you know, them with the minnows of Panama. But, you know, what do you feel is like maybe the most important matchup for this Tunisian side, if there is one? And also, you know, just your overall thoughts on this group and, you know, can they cause a surprise?
They can, of course they can. Tunisia has never—they've never been blown out at a World Cup. If you look at the results in 1998, 2002, 2006, or even as you mentioned, they were the first side to have a victory, any African side, in 1978 when they beat Mexico. They've never been pushovers, so you can expect them to be very well set up, very well organized. They're going to be targeting that match against Panama. That's an imperative match. They have to win. They have to take 3 points from that match. And to prepare, they've played against Costa Rica, who they believe maybe play similar. It's, again, that age-old question that does geographic proximity translate to, you know, a similarity in playing style? They believe so. They've booked a friendly with Costa Rica. They won that friendly. They booked a friendly with Iran. They beat Iran as well. So they've looked good in preparation. And I think they want those 3 points against Panama. Then they would only really need to draw with Belgium or England to have that chance of going through. They're very capable of doing it. It's going to be a difficult task because those are two heavyweights, but there are a lot of questions surrounding the English national team and the Belgium national team under Roberto Martinez. So I don't think it's as done of a deal as people think, but they're definitely the underdogs going into it.
Now, I want to take a quick peek at the players to watch here in this particular World Cup. I know many will look at this Tunisian side, and because many of them are either African or Asian-based, may not recognize any of the names. Probably the most recognizable name on this side is Johan Benlouane, who is at Leicester City. But my question to you is, besides recognizable names, I'm concerned about them replacing Sanki's goals, being that he's injured and out of this World Cup. He scored 3 goals for them in World Cup qualifying, and Tunisia actually was second in goals scored in World Cup qualifying with 11, and the team that was first in World Cup qualifying goals was actually a team they eliminated and I believe it was DR Congo, who scored 14 goals. So my first question to you would be, where do they get the goal production from if their top goal scorer is now not going to be playing?
Well, Tunisia get their goals from everywhere, and they get them in any fashion. Mm-hmm. That is to say, from you know, corner kicks, from counterattacks, from well-constructed goals, as they showed in their March friendlies. So their goals can come from all around the pitch. They don't really have a recognized goal-to-goal scorer. However, I'm going to point out the man playing in Ligue 1 at Rennes, Wahbi Khazri. He's a player that came through the ranks at Bastia and then was at Sunderland last year for a lot of money, and I think is now on loan at Rennes. And he's been a winger throughout his career, but this year he's been moved up as a striker, and I think he has something like approximately 10 goals in France as a striker, and he's been impressing. So I think he could be that man to take on the goal-scoring burden for Tunisia. But also look for a player in midfield named Ferjani Sassi. He's a very elegant, very sleek and smooth player who is loads of experience on the African continent, playing in African Champions Leagues and playing at the biggest clubs in Africa, and who even had a spell in France for 2 seasons playing at Metz. He's very, very crucial to the way Tunisia construct their attacks. He's that link between defense and attack. I think those two players are going to be the players they're going to have to count on in the absence of Youssef Msekni.
Now, Sassi's currently at Al Nassr in Saudi Arabia. Would you consider him the player to watch that would maybe be the up-and-coming star that may get his break into European football from here?
Yeah, I think it would be him. Or Ali Maloul. Ali Maloul is a left back. He's probably one of the best players not playing their trade, in Europe. He's playing for Al Ahly in Egypt, which again is a massive club on the African continent, and who really pay wages that are competitive to the European wages. There's been an exodus of Tunisian players to Saudi Arabia. Players like Ferjani Sassi, the starting goalkeeper Ayman Belbouli, another starting central midfielder Mohamed Amin Ben Amour. These players all went to Saudi Arabia in January. And it was very weird because we saw an exodus of Saudi players going to Spain and not really playing. There was, I think, 7 or 8 of them. And then we saw 4 or 5 really important Tunisian players going to Saudi Arabia. And a lot of questions were asked. Is that a good idea? In the end, the jury's come out and basically said yes, it was, because not only were the Tunisian clubs given a lot of money, some of the loan fees were up to 1 and 2 million euros, but the players were removed from the context of North African football, which always has a lot of passion and violence in the stadiums, and they're in a more relaxed atmosphere in Saudi Arabia, where there's not that much pressure to win matches. They're in better facilities, you know, in Saudi Arabia and the Gulf in general. They have state-of-the-art technology, so people believe it was a good move for those 3 or 4 important players to move to Saudi Arabia.
Now, obviously, looking into predictions real quick, and before I get into more of the actually tactical stuff, I do have a question about the squad, because you look at the recent call-ups that Tunisia has had in the last few, I would say, months or so, you know, and you look at the players that they all and where they play their trade in, you know, majority of them play domestically in Tunisia, some also play in Saudi Arabia, some in Qatar, Egypt, you know, the one that you mentioned plays at Leicester, Belgium, among other clubs, France, of course, I think is the big demonstrator. You know, is there a fear or maybe perhaps a lack of interest that maybe this World Cup will help these Tunisian players to go out and really stride into the top European leagues? Or do you feel that this is just something that helps them, you know, for young Tunisian players to head to a Saudi Arabia, you know, or to head to a Qatar or really demonstrate their capacity in the Tunisian domestic league before heading to Europe? And also, you know, is France the right place for these types of players? I just want your thoughts on perhaps this whole scenario.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because for players that are playing in North Africa, Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and even Egypt, the clubs that they play at pay competitive wages to a lot of smaller European clubs. So what I mean by that is, for example, I've been talking to a player today who plays for MC of Algiers here in Algeria, in the capital city of Algiers, who pretty much told me that he didn't want to go to a Ligue 1 club in France because they wouldn't pay him what he gets paid over here. It was a smaller Ligue 1 club. So it happens very often in Algeria. The players get comfortable here because they get the wages over here, because they have a big name over here, because the national media is paying attention to them over here. It might be the same thing, I'm not sure, in the U.S., maybe with players playing in the MLS and maybe not wanting to take that risk to move to Europe. But then again, the debate is, will they ever really fulfill their potential and develop as best as they could if they did move to Europe? So it's an interesting question, and I don't believe there's a real answer. I think we have to take it on a case-by-case basis. But I don't really have a prediction to say if more Tunisian players are going to end up in Europe after the World Cup or not. I think it'd have to depend on their performance.
No, of course. And of course, I think the comparison you can make of wages, and of course, you know, it's that job security. It's heading to a job that's better paid, no matter how it is. I think every person is different in that. But, you know, you could take the comparison to China, for example, you know, big European players that headed all the way to China in the prime of their careers, you know, just for bigger wages and are never really heard of with a couple exceptions. But yeah, I definitely see your point. That's for sure. Now, obviously, you know, Maher, you know, obviously this is a really, I mean, this Tunisian side maybe is unfamiliar for a lot of people that maybe don't cover North African football. So I just want your thoughts of, you know, having watched them in qualifying and of course in these friendlies, you know, what to expect from this Tunisian side. And also, if you need to give a starting 11 for this team, what is it?
I don't even think the coach knows what the starting 11 will be. Look, most of the starters are pretty confirmed. In goal, you'll probably have Ayman Belbouli, Ayman Mathlouthi, as his real name is, who's playing in Saudi Arabia at the moment. He's a very experienced goalkeeper with the Tunisian national team and around the African continent, playing most of his career in ES Sahel. One of Tunisia's main strengths will be their fullbacks in attack. You have on the left, you have Ali Melou, the player that I already earmarked, playing for Al Ahly in Egypt. He's, I think, led the Tunisian league in scoring, if I'm not mistaken, a few times. I think he gets like between 8 and 12 goals per season as a left back, which gives you an idea of how much he attacks. And on the right, it'll be the same thing. On the right, at right back, it's actually Al Ahly's main rival's right back. His name is Hamdi Neguez. So you have two Tunisians playing for the two biggest Cairo clubs in Egypt on either side. And both of these guys get up the pitch and really support their attack. So you can expect them to do that. One big question is who will be playing in the center of defense. I think Yassine Merjah will be one of them. But the second question will be, will it be Johan Benelwen from Leicester City, who just joined the national side in March? If not him, will they maybe recall Ayman Abdennour of Olympique de Marseille, who's had a torrid season but has always been a leader of this national team? We don't know. In midfield, you're going to have you're going to have Ilyas Khiri of Montpellier in Ligue 1 in France, very impressive defensive midfielder. You're going to have Ferjani Sassi, who we already spoke about. And if he recovers from injury, Mohamed Amin Ben Amor. So Ferjani Sassi and Mohamed Amin Ben Amor, who have been playing in Saudi Arabia, both box-to-box midfielders who can defend and attack. You have a very solid midfield. Honestly, one that I think can hold their own against the likes of Belgium and England. And then in attack, without Msakni, you're going to have Kasri Sliti, who's playing for Dijon, very good player as well, and probably Anis Bedri on the right side, who was actually came through the ranks at Olympique Lyon. So you have very, very solid Ligue 1 players all around the pitch, but their main strengths are the midfield three and the attacking fullbacks.
Okay, and moving forward from there, we'd like to look at what we think is a reasonable expectation for this team. So given the group that they are in with Group G, with England, Belgium, and Panama, what is a reasonable expectation for this Tunisian side? Can they make it out of this group?
Look, if you're a betting man, I would say hold off on the bets to put the Carthage Eagles through. I love the team. I love the people. I love the country. I just think that with Msakni out, the odds are really stacked against them. I would say put your money on Belgium and England going through. However, for the rest of us watching, do not write this side off. They're going to be well-organized. They're not going to play with any kind of inferiority complex. They're going to be well-organized. They're going to be good technically, and they're going to hold their own. They are capable of going to the knockout stages.
Now, just looking at the Group D real quick, I do want to ask you about this particular group. What is the most important game for the Tunisian side? Is it the first match against Belgium? I'm sorry, against England? Is it the last match against Panama? What is the most important match for them?
I think like I said, the Panama match for the coach is an imperative must win. They have to take 3 points from there. Right. And then they don't really have a preference for Belgium or England. They're going to try to nick a point from either or. So I think that's going to be their strategy. But that Panama match is the one they've earmarked, the one they've said we've got to win.
The one that will make this a successful World Cup for them.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Now, let's say by all dreams of dreams that they do manage to lift the trophy in Russia in 2018. What would that mean for the people of Tunisia?
It would be massive because Tunisia, for people that haven't been following the news, is a country very much in transition. They're the ones that kicked off the Arab Spring in 2011. So since then, they've went from an authoritarian military state to a real ray of light in terms of the political process. That they have a real functioning democracy, one of the few ones in North Africa and the Middle East. But it's also taken its toll economically on the country because they've had some terrorism problems. It's hit the tourism sector very hard. So they've had some difficult problems economically speaking. The country hasn't had its best days really over the last 5-6 years. So really winning the World Cup would, I can't even imagine it. Honestly, it would be a party of epic proportions. I don't think we would have ever seen anything like that ever again.
It would certainly be an extremely bright light in some dark days, that's for sure.
So, absolutely.
So gentlemen, I do want to thank you both for joining me tonight and helping me break down the Carthage Eagles. Again, this was your Tunisia World Cup preview at This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello. Thanks for listening. And good night.